From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Welcome to ARRL's The Doctor Is In. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Joel, before we get started, you had something you wanted to mention about a previous episode.
Indeed, I did. It's hard to believe, but every now and then I make a mistake. And I did make one. A number of people dropped me a note, and I appreciated that. During our discussion about keyers a few weeks ago, I erroneously said that the keying weight was the ratio of dash length to dot length, and that's not correct. The correct definition, it is the ratio between dot and space.
Ah, okay.
And on a bug, this can be changed by making the dot contact hit with more or less dwell time. So it's nothing to do with the dash, which is a completely different side of things. And that ratio is important too, but that ratio is generally, or the dash is generally just the time of three dots.
Okay.
So that's not usually adjustable.
All right. Well, that makes sense. You're not infallible after all.
I was surprised to find that out. Actually, my wife has been telling me that for 53 years now, 54 years coming up. Maybe even before that.
Well, we'll move on to our topic then, which happens to be antenna analyzers. And I love my antenna analyzer. I use it all the time. But it's really not an analyzer, is it?
Actually, I would take issue with the other word. It actually is an analyzer, but it doesn't know that it's analyzing antennas. Much like an antenna tuner doesn't actually tune an antenna,
well, that's
per
true.
Se. It tunes the impedance at the bottom of, or the input to your antenna system. An antenna analyzer would be more accurately described as an antenna impedance measuring device.
That's a mouthful, though.
It is. An antenna analyzer rolls off the tongue a little easier, I think. Maybe an antenna system analyzer, but it doesn't really, the one thing it doesn't tell you anything about is what the antenna does. It tells you what the antenna's impedance is as seen at the point at which you measure it, which is usually not at the antenna, which is
true.
Often up in the air. But it's certainly, I agree, a very useful device as long as you understand what it is you're measuring, know how to interpret the results.
And there are a lot of analyzers out there these days. I mean, there are fairly simple analyzers that just give you a numeric readout. There are others, though, that plot curves, SWR curves and whatnot. How do these things work?
Okay, well, the interesting thing is a lot of people wonder why they need an antenna analyzer at all, because
true.
Oftentimes, like the basic information you get many times from an antenna analyzer is the standing wave ratio. Most modern transmitters or antenna tuners, depending on what's hooked to your antenna, give you that information directly without an antenna analyzer. So why would you need something else? Well, there are a couple of problems with that. One is you can only take that data on frequencies that you're authorized to operate on.
Mm-hmm.
And that can limit your ability to measure antennas. The other thing that happens is you take that data with the transmitter transmitting, and of course, if there's somebody else on frequency, which there shouldn't be, you should listen first, but you can't take data without interfering with somebody who's on the frequency.
Yes.
So if you want data on a particular frequency and it's in use, you have to wait. So an antenna analyzer fundamentally is different in that it uses a much lower level signal that's low enough so it can be operated on any frequency without causing interference of any note, and therefore you can characterize your antenna over all frequencies. Now, this is particularly important if you're developing an antenna as opposed to just checking the one that's connected to your radio. I mean, that's fine too, and the radio can tell you if it's still working properly, but if it's not working properly, you really don't have any insight into what's going on because it just says, you know, SWR is now 10 to 1 instead of 1 to 1, and what does that mean? Is it you have to look out the window to see if the antenna's on the ground or what's happening. With the antenna analyzer, you can get a lot more information, and it depends on the model. The very basic ones typically just tell you the SWR, which is often exactly what you need, and you can plot the SWR across the frequency range, including above and below the ham band that you're interested in, and you can decide if the antenna is too long or too short, and you can adjust accordingly, whereas you can't go that far to either side with your transmitter.
No.
So that's where it really comes into play. But the other thing is it can also, depending on the model, rather than just the standing wave ratio, it can give you a view of the actual complex impedance at that point. And on some of them, on mine, for example, it can give you the SWR and the complex impedance all on one screen at the same time, so you can see exactly what's happening. It can also sweep across a range of frequencies.
That's a function I love.
It's very handy. In fact, mine can sweep across five ranges, or actually measure the SWR on five frequencies at the same time in different bands, which is really handy if you're trying to trim a multi-band antenna in which the changing one band's length causes all the other bands to become mistuned. So you can watch them all at the same time. This is very convenient.
Oh, that'd be perfect for a fan dipole.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
You might have some hair left when you were done working on it. So there's a lot you can do with it. But talking about what you can do with an antenna, in a way, just scratches the surface, because the antenna analyzer does not really know whether or not you've connected it to an antenna.
True.
So you can connect it to a component. And if you're measuring complex impedance, especially if it tells you the sign, which some do and some don't, it will tell you what the impedance of that component is, or this network, or something else. And the complex impedance of the antenna system, of course, also allows you to design a matching network for it, which is very handy. But you can also use it in place of an impedance bridge, determine the impedance of an inductor or a capacitor. You can measure an inductor, you get the resistive and the inductive components, so you can determine the Q. It also can be a signal generator. Usually to make it a very useful signal generator, you probably want to add a step attenuator after it. That can be very good too. Some of them have a built-in frequency counter, which they use to display the frequency, and some of those allow you to have access to it directly, so you can use it as a frequency counter. So all of a sudden, this one little box that you have to check your antenna becomes kind of the center point of your beginning radio laboratory, with all kinds of test capabilities that you can have. Some of them have a time domain reflectometer, virtual time domain reflectometer that they incorporate in it. You can use it to look like a radar screen down your transmission line. You can find all the bumps where there are any discontinuities, or if it's broken or shorted or anything else, you can see where that is. And that can be make it much easier than having to dig up the whole transmission line to find that. So that's just a few of the things that you can do with it. And if the analyzer does not give you the sign of the imaginary part of the impedance, you can find it out by just slightly increasing the frequency. And if the reactance goes up, it means it's inductive. And if it goes down, it means it's capacitive.
Now, by sign, you mean plus or minus.
Plus or minus.
I just wanted to clarify that.
Yes. Yeah. In other words, a plus would be an inductive reactance. And if you're designing a network, you need to know which a matching network, you need to know what you're dealing with. And the only caveat to that is that you have to make sure you don't go through zero, because you get to the other side of the resonance and then the sign is not what you think it is. So be very careful about that. And speaking of limitations, the other limitation that you should be aware of is it's very handy that the internal source in your antenna analyzer puts out very low power, so it doesn't interfere with people. But all of its measurements are based on the signal it sees at the connection to the antenna system, which is what you generally want. The problem with that is if you happen to be next door to a broadcast transmitter, the signal that's at those terminals is going to be a combination of the one from the antenna analyzer and the one that gets picked up from the broadcast station.
Oh, yeah.
And now you've got a real problem, because the antenna analyzer gives you very strange information. This is particularly a problem with people measuring 160-meter vertical antennas, which happen to be very good at picking up broadcast stations. And just as with the ham gear that's connected to such an antenna, you can get filters to eliminate or reduce at least the input from that. Also, many broadcast stations, especially regional ones, have quiet times or times when they change their antenna pattern. So they may be off the air during certain nighttime hours. And if you can wait until then to take your data, you can recover in that way. So other than that, I think they are very useful devices indeed, and I wouldn't be without one either.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I love mine. In fact, the other day I was playing around with an 80-meter inverted L, the one you and I were discussing,
yep.
And it was wonderful. I put up the wire, cut it to what I thought was about a quarter wave, give or take, but then connected my analyzer, swept up and down, and realized, oops, I'm a little too long. The low SWR point was actually well below the bottom of the 80-meter band. Calculated the length I needed to cut off, cut it off, swept it again. Bingo. That was it.
And that's what they're really good for, because you might not have, on your radio, you might not have been able to tune down that far to be able to measure, to take an SWR reading. below the bottom of the band. The one thing you have to be careful about is you have to understand what happens at the bottom of the transmission line is not exactly the same thing that's happening at the antenna. And depending on exactly what you're doing and what kind of information you're trying to get, it's good to make that translation. You can use software to do that or Smith charts, other kinds of things to determine what the actual impedance. If you know the impedance at the bottom of the transmission line, you can determine the impedance at the feed point of the antenna if you know the length and type of transmission line. Sometimes not taking that into account can really fool you.
Yes.
So it's important to be aware of that. You know, this is a topic that has a lot of things that we could talk about. You could write a book about it. In fact, I did. It's called, what's it called? Understanding Your Antenna Analyzer.
So there you go.
So it's an ARL book, and it's available from the ARL bookstore or your favorite book retailer. So any other questions are probably in there, or if you don't find it there, by all means, drop me a note.
Perfect. Let's take a break, hear from DX Engineering, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Remember your first contact? The excitement of that first CQ? The exhilaration of making your first QSO? At DX Engineering, we know that feeling too. That's why we've committed to making your on-air experience the very best it can be. DX Engineering ships quickly, which means less station downtime. And we have free shipping for almost any order over $99. We've recently expanded our inventory, so you don't have to wait for the gear you need. DX Engineering has introduced all new radio products and revived legendary brands, all with the goal of helping you enjoy amateur radio. Most importantly, the DX Engineering team is here to help you. You've got a team of highly experienced hands ready to work out technical issues, answer questions, and help you optimize your station performance. That excitement you felt from the first contact, it can happen again and again with help from DX Engineering. DXEngineering.com. That's DXEngineering.com.
And we're back, Joel. We have a question, if you're prepared to answer one.
Well, let me find out.
Okay.
Ask me the question. I'll tell you no lies.
Well, this one happens to come from Terry, K9TAD, and he's asking, I'm getting conflicting information about antenna interaction from stacking antennas on a single mast. I have a 30-foot mast with three antennas. Now, he goes on to describe it here. Starting from the top, a 2-meter vertical antenna for FM, a 6-meter compact loop antenna, 1 foot below the 2-meter vertical. That's where the 6-meter antenna is. He's got a multiband HF horizontal dipole covering 40, 20, 15, and 10 meters. That's 2 feet below the 6-meter loop. And he's asking, if I replace the 6-meter loop with a 3-element 6-meter Yagi, will I have problems? How about adding a 17 and 12-meter dipole?
That sounds like quite a lot to put on a 30-foot mast, but I guess...
Doesn't it? Yeah.
yeah, I guess I'd start by saying, bear in mind that you've roughly doubled the wind loading if you do all this stuff.
Yes.
And that's fine as long as if you have a rotator on top of the mast, as long as the rotator can handle the load and the mast won't snap and come down, then nothing will work very well. It's all scattered all over the backyard. So be careful about that. To get to your specific question, antennas do couple to their surroundings, and... the closer they are, the more they couple. In my experience, I don't know of a really, I guess, well, the best thing to do is either measure the interaction or analyze the interaction with modeling software to find out what's going to happen. But there are a couple of rules of thumb that generally hold. First of all, vertically and horizontally polarized antennas don't have much interaction. Their fields are going in opposite directions and they don't really see each other. Most antennas also don't see any structures that are smaller than a half wavelength in their dimensions, which is handy. But notice that if you have two antennas, that only works in one direction usually. So the 6-meter Yagi will not be seen by the HF antenna, but the 6-meter Yagi will see the HF antenna because it's bigger than 6 meters.
True.
So that's a 6-meter half wave. Coupled conductors don't usually reduce the total radiation, so you aren't necessarily losing your power, but what happens is it gets redirected. Some of it gets redirected. For your dipole antennas, maybe that's not too terrible. Maybe they it changes some of the elevation angle a little bit or one thing or another. But for a Yagi, if you're looking for front-to-back ratio or gain in a particular direction, what you don't want to do is have signals radiating in other directions because that kind of defeats the purpose of the Yagi. So that's something to be careful about. Close antennas of the same polarization may change the tuning of each other. So that's an issue sometimes. Even if the antenna performance doesn't change that much, it may be you'll have to readjust the lengths to make them tune properly. Now, there are a couple of rules of thumb, and I'm not sure that they exactly apply in all cases, but many will say that for Yagis on the same support, a spacing of half of the longest boom length usually provides a reasonable minimal interaction between the antennas.
I've heard that, yes.
That's not an exact science either, but it just gives you an idea what you could think of is going to result. Well, what does that mean? You likely can add your 12 and 17 meter dipole fairly close to the existing dipole, but I would suggest taking fairly complete SWR data on the existing antenna, perhaps every 100 kilohertz, and recording it. Then do the same for the 12 and 17 meter dipole by itself in a separate support. Then put them together and see if the readings change. If the readings don't change, you aren't going to have much of a problem. Again, any re-radiation or reflections from one or the other is just going to possibly redistribute the energy. It's not going to lose the energy, so you're not losing something. You may go someplace else. Maybe that's good. I mean, depending on where you go. And you could kind of keep moving them closer together until you start seeing an interaction, and then just back them up to where you don't see much. If you do see an interaction, you may be able to just adjust the length a little bit between the traps, depending on what bands are affected, and have everything come out fine. Another thing you can do is horizontal antennas, or whatever kind of antennas, if they're perpendicular, they don't particularly interact. So if you put the two horizontal dipoles perpendicular to each other, so one is facing north-south, the other is east-west, for example, you'll have very little interaction. If you're rotating them, you have to either keep track in your mind.
I can see this coming, yes.
Or put an extra pointer on your rotator control unit so that you can tell where it is. Otherwise, you'll go a little crazy with that. But if your mind is agile enough to deal with that, that's a very easy solution to the problem, and you're almost guaranteed not to have an issue with that.
My mind is not sufficiently agile.
Yeah, it's especially early morning hours or something. Now, in terms of the 6-meter Yagi, my thinking was that the interaction to the dipole was the one that you'd most have to worry about. So what I did was I took a model I had of a 6-meter Yagi that I built once, and I looked at its gain and front-to-back ratio at that 30-foot height that you have, and EasyNeck predicted a gain of about 13 dB. And a front-to-back of 29.5 dB. Very nice. I then added a 20-meter dipole 2 feet below, and the 6-meter gain actually increased to 0.02 decibels. I wouldn't count on that. But
it's a bonus.
Yeah. Front-to-back ratio degraded by about 3 or 4 dB. Now, that may be a problem, but actually, in my experience, 6-meter front-to-back ratio, unless you're in a very congested metropolitan area, is not a big issue. In fact, sometimes it's good to know who's behind you, because maybe you want to talk to them too.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't think you'd notice any of the difference, but do check your wind loading.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you, Joel.
My pleasure.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.